Well, thank you very much to all the speakers, and thank you very much for inviting me here today. I think over my career, I've worked in a professional services capacity with boardrooms and with government ministers, and I thought what I would do is just spend the 3 minutes commenting on the role of the agent, actually, the role of the trusted advisor in communicating risk, because I think that applies both to the boardroom and to Whitehall. One of the things I think that is common to both CEOs and to ministers is a key feature of whether or not they're successful is the quality of their decision-making capability. And being a successful CEO means that basically you get it right more than you get it wrong. And I know from the people I work with who are responsible for managing very significant P&Ls, they tend to work on the basis that probably one in five of the decisions they make won't be the right one, but the four out of five that they made that was the right ones took the organisation forward and hopefully faster than the competition and ultimately to the benefit of the shareholder. And I think we have to understand risk and decision making within that context of people whose job it is to professionally take responsibility for uncertainty and make decisions, take it as given that some of them will be wrong. And the extent to which they consult and the extent to which they look at materials will depend on a number of things, many of which I think are common there in the business literature. So I think it is interesting to look at the culture of the boardroom and to look actually at the culture of the individual CEO. And I suspect the biggest risk that any business ever makes is in the appointment of the CEO, because they will then ultimately set the culture of risk-taking. So I think a number of things shape how decision-makers deal with risk. I think it's to do with the immediacy of the risk. It's to do with how normal that risk is. Who is at risk, whether it's their shareholders, their employees, and themselves, and who ultimately will own the risk if it goes wrong. And then I think it will also be about their personal values and whether or not the risk that they may be exposing themselves or others or their shareholders to, whether or not that chimes with their own personal set of values. And there I would say I have made the decision to spend a lot of shareholders' money on mitigating risk within the business I was at that time responsible for, because it involved an issue to do with safety of children and their data. And as a parent, I knew that my own values were such that if anyone was asking me to share that kind of information, I would expect it to be properly controlled. And I do think someone else who was not a parent may not have felt the anxiety to quite the same extent. So I think that the personal values of the decision maker also come into play. But the last point I'd make really is about contingency, and I think that risk management structures operate to try and manage away some of the issues that contingency that come into play always in decision making. And by that I mean, I think Samar referred to risk registers and the role that they play, and I know certainly in the business that I run at the moment there is a risk register. And a lot of money is invested in employing good people to hold that risk register dear and to take control of it and to make sure that the right thing is done. Because I think the boardroom dynamic is a very interesting thing. And I think speakers did refer to the way in which the boardroom is communicated with. So it's not just about the individual decision maker and the CEO. It will be about the team they have around them. It will be about the extent to which there is a culture where dispute or argument is favoured or not. And that will also depend on the contingency of how long that CEO has been in place, whether or not the team they have around them is the team they would appoint, or whether or not it's the team they inherited and haven't yet had the chance to sort out. So when it comes to the individual decision, there are some occasions where a CEO will make that decision by themselves. And I think there a very important issue is the extent to which the person who is sharing the risk with them takes on the role or not of trusted advisor. And I think the speed at which a CEO has to make decisions and ministers have to make decisions is unimaginable, I think, for people who don't sit in a decision-making space, and they will rarely have time to properly study the evidence. And therefore, the role of the trusted advisor, the role of the person who purveys that risk, whether it's Lloyds or someone else, it is that key thing as to whether or not you trust the person who is sharing the risk. And I think what CEOs have to do all the time is make quite emotional decisions as to whether or not they trust a key individual. And we know what goes wrong And this is Chatham House rules, but we know what goes wrong when ministers or prime ministers believe that all of the decision making must be based in the evidence, because they never in the end get round to being able to make any decisions because they never have enough time to go through it all. And then I think beyond that, it is that culture of the boardroom and the extent to which you are in an organisation or within an economic sector or a business sector where taking risky decisions is normal or not, and the extent to which the CEO will confer and spread the risk and the risk-making decision amongst trusted advisors around them. So I think overall, I think contingency is extremely important, and I know that in 2010 there was a similar debate here looking at risk-making, at risk-taking and how risk and hazard was conveyed. And there was a very interesting set of diagrams that I looked at this afternoon when I was preparing, which showed that often analysts and scientists, what they like to do is to explain the world. And on the other hand, are decision makers and ministers, and what they like to do is try and change the world. And on the one hand, there are a group of people who do like rationality, and on the other hand, there are a group of people who are swayed by emotion. So I think the role of the envoy, the role of the person who has to take the materials or the evidence base to the decision maker should not be underestimated, because I think sometimes it can be more impactful than the actual risk hazard analysis itself. And that might disappoint, I think, a lot of people in the room who like to sit on the side of rational. But, you know, I work, WPP employs 170,000 people around the world and turns over £8 billion, and in a marketing services environment, I would say that there's not a single business leader in that group who believes that people ever make decisions on rationality, and that's why advertising communication services exist. So I'll leave it at that.
Thank you very much.